Hi, this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Manton Reese.
And this is Core Intuition, Skipping the Morning Session. Okay, Manton, we are back from WWDC.
Yes.
Excited to get another episode done here. How was the conference for you?
It was great. It was a good time. It was a little different every year. I mean, I've been a whole bunch of times, but every year is a little bit different. But I had a good time. It was the shortest trip that I've made. I came out late Sunday afternoon, early evening, and left Friday after lunch. But it worked out well.
Cool. Well, as you know, I arrived late, came in on Monday, so I actually touched down after the keynote was over, and I kept waiting on the plane. I was like, okay, where's the exciting news? You know, because I think everybody was sort of hoping for something on top of the expected iPhone 4.
Mm-hmm.
There was rumors about some kind of Apple TV update.
Right.
I was sort of hoping for maybe new Mac Pros or something.
New Mac Pros. The Mac Pro is dead. They're never going to do another one.
Think so?
It's all MacBooks and iPads. And iMacs.
And Mac Minis.
And Mac Minis, that's right. Yeah, so what do I know? I wasn't expecting that.
No, I wasn't expecting that. And I got to say, I think that's... I take that as a vote of confidence for the Mac. I mean, it's kind of a nice design. You know, it's not something you... I guess you could say, oh, it was under development before they got too busy with iPad stuff. But I mean, that's a nice piece of work. They weren't just letting, you know, like interns that haven't designed stuff before put together the Mac Mini.
Yeah. So I think you had a tweet too about, I should have pulled it up, but you had a tweet about this joking that surely the Mac is dead because they just released this really great new Mac Mini. So clearly they don't care about the Mac at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's if you look at the design on that thing, I just think it sort of feels like something out of the next generation or something, you know? To me, it feels like where's the iMac that's going to follow? Where's the, I don't know, can I dream? Where's the tower, the Mac
yeah.
Pro?
I'm just kidding about the Mac Pro. There'll definitely be another one. And I think this year... Unfortunately, Apple is not good about, I mean, they sent a message this year at the show, or they seem to, by having it completely just iPhone related. And even in the keynote, I mean, there was a line where Steve Jobs was saying, you know, we have two great platforms, web, you know, HTML5 and the iPhone. And I was like, wait a minute. What about that third platform? But they were just talking about the iPhone. But it's funny, in some of the sort of emails that Steve Jobs has been responding to random people with, he seemed to make it pretty clear that don't worry about it. You know, maybe next year we'll have everything be about the Mac, or
right.
Don't worry about it. You know, the Mac is fine. And it would be nice if Apple actually made us, you know, maybe a stronger statement that, yeah, we're working on 10.7, don't worry about it. But they're just so wrapped up in the iPhone, that's all they're thinking about right now.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, another kind of funny piece of timing is the release of 10.6.4 yesterday,
right.
Tuesday.
Yeah.
And it just makes me wonder, like, the work must have been done before WWDC, I'm imagining.
Surely.
Unless it's like, okay, everybody, all hands on board to get, you know, everything for the WWDC release and for the WWDC keynote ready.
Mm-hmm.
And then those of you who aren't going to WWDC can keep working on 10.6.4. But yeah. No, it's so quickly after the conference that it just makes me think it was postponed for, I don't know, maybe just maybe to keep the focus on stuff going on at the conference, but also maybe just because, you know, they wanted to have everybody available for like fighting fires or whatever mm-hmm. that might come out of the conference, and didn't want the risk of releasing a new update at the same time.
Yeah, I'm sure that's right. I mean, I've made the mistake many times of releasing an update right before leaving for a conference. And it's, there's always that temptation to do it because, you know, wrap up this work I'm doing, ship it, and then I'm going to go to the conference and I don't have to worry about coding. But the reverse always happens, right?
Right.
There could be a bug and then you're putting out fires, like you said. So you flew in, you missed the keynote. You flew in the Monday afternoon.
Yep.
Yeah, it was funny. I wasn't expecting much from the keynote. This is the first time I was actually in overflow for it. I opted for a breakfast with friends and lazily strolled into Moscone because I just wasn't feeling the wake up at 5 a.m. and wait in line 4 hours thing this year. But the only thing I was expecting that I didn't see was the iPad running some beta of 4. whatever. Other than that, I thought it was good. I thought the phone is great. I mean, I pre-ordered one yesterday.
I'm excited about that phone. It looks really nice. I've never really been a fan of the curved back. I don't like the way that the phone sort of rocks on a flat surface.
Yep.
So I'm hoping the new one will. It looks like it won't do that. I think I'm more of a sharp edges kind of guy in mm-hmm. many ways, and so this one speaks to me. And of course, you remember I got my iPhone stolen, so I've been back on a iPhone 3G for a while, which, you know, cry me a river, right? But but you know, I got used to the video camera and all this nice stuff in the 3GS, so I'm really just anxious to get back into that. I think there's going to be like a 6-month absence of movies of my son because
right. yeah,
it's just like the lack of availability of an easy camera. So it'll be nice to get that back. And hopefully this time I won't manage to get it stolen. So we can't really talk too much about specifics of the conference because as usual, it's all under NDA, but it was great to see so many people and especially some of our listeners, I know, took the opportunity to come up and say hi. That was cool as usual. I'm always sort of surprised when just random people will sort of be like, what I like best is when you're getting introduced to somebody and they're like, oh, okay, who are you? And, oh, okay, nice to meet you. And then you mention the podcast name. Oh, that's you. Oh, that's great. I listen to that podcast all the time. And that's just like, wow, that's cool. This person actually doesn't even, know anything about me, but they listen to the show. So maybe that, you know what that means, Manton? It means we're not pimping our own wares enough. Because seriously, yeah, I have people right. like, oh no, Mars Edit, never heard of that. No. Oh, Core Intuition?
That's a good point. We need to put an official little plug at the beginning and end of each show for our products. URLs, yeah. How much they cost.
We'll just make it sound like an ad.
Yeah, it is great to meet people that listen, though. And I mean, it's funny. I mean, I met a bunch of great people last week. And I mean, meet so many people now. It really is difficult. I don't know. Some people can, you meet them once and they can remember, a face and a name, 5 years later. I'm not like that. 5 minutes later, I'm like, oh, I forgot that person's name already. but it's great to when you meet someone that you, oh, now I read your blog, so now I'm totally going to connect you to that, or I follow you on Twitter, and now every time you post, I'll remember, you next year.
Right.
And I almost found last week, the habit I got into, if I talk to someone for more than a handful of minutes, I asked what their Twitter username is so I could follow them so that I could remember what was going on. Because I know there's something about keeping that person's name fresh in your mind that helps connect,
right.
meeting in the real world.
Yeah, I had a few embarrassing, like, oh, I haven't met you. Who are you? We met last night.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I'm like, oh.
Whoops.
And yeah. I don't even think it was, I don't think it was necessarily over partying. I just think it was like, it's just like you're saying, like, there's so many faces and so many new people that, and sometimes it would be something subtle. Like I figured out in one case, a guy I met had been wearing sunglasses one time and then not the other time. And it's,
right.
It's like, you're a completely new person.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, the bottom line, I don't know, especially if you meet someone at night and the lighting is not great. And I mean, a lot of us look the same. I don't know. The conference is not, there's not a lot of variety in the conference in terms of the type of people. But yeah, it was good though. It was good. I'm glad for the people that did come up and say hi. Thank you. And if you didn't see us, there's always next year.
Indeed. Well, speaking of that, I have to say, you know that I was a little hesitant about going this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying this now so that I can remind myself, hopefully, next year. The truth is, I just have to go every year. They could say, you know, Macs, iPads, canceled.
Right.
We're doing Windows only from now on. And I think I'd still have to go just because, you know, I'm always, you know, I have to say this year, I probably got less specifically out of the conference. We'll see. We'll wait and see if I can kind of catch up on the value of the content with the videos. But
mm-hmm.
often I'm like, oh, I'm going to get access to all this new stuff. And, you know, like the year before last year, it was, I think, Snow Leopard, right? You got a lot of Snow Leopard stuff. It's always just kind of like, well, what are we going to get this year that sort of is unique and special? Only we get it.
Mm-hmm.
And without saying exactly what we got this year, I just say, you know what? I'm excited about some of it, but it's not the kind of thing that makes me go, oh, that was definitely worth my money.
Mm-hmm.
However, there is all of this intangible stuff. And it comes down to things like, did I run into people inside the conference center, in the halls, in the labs that I would not have run into outside? Answer, yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in a sense, it's like even just knowing what I'm not missing is almost worth it for me. It's like, I'm always reminding myself when I do, I always go these days, but, usually I have to sort of justify it to myself because I am not a great classroom learner. That's not kind of how I do the conferences. As a sit down, like absorb information thing, doesn't work too well for me. So, it's always been a little bit harder of a sell for me, but, I want to remind myself it's always worth going. For me as an indie developer, it's just like the cost of doing business is to surrender some cash to Apple and see what they have to say to me, you know? And, my wife had a good point. She says, you should always go until the first year that you afterwards feel that was an absolute waste of my time. You know,
yeah,
like
yeah.
if I
That's
feel that
point.
Way 1 year, then that can be sort of the sacrificial year. But I'm always trying to second guess ahead of time. Like, oh, that, mm-hmm. that conference is going to be all about iPhone. You know, that conference is not going to have a Mac award or whatever. And I mean, the truth is I do want to learn about iPhone and iPad. I'm pretty steeped in that now, but I could still sort of, you know, you can kind of try to predict and say, oh, there's not going to be anything new. You know, like what about years when there's not going to be a new, iPhone OS and there's not going to be a new Mac OS. Do you still go? And I think for me, the answer is yes, because there's usually some surprise and you don't know what that surprise is going to be. And you don't know whether you'll feel left out for not having access to it immediately. So it's sort of a luxury, I guess, to be able to say, oh, I'll just pay the money every year. Mm-hmm. But
I think you're right, though. It's the price to pay for being part of the platform, for being part of the community. I usually try to imagine, like, how am I going to feel that week if I'm not there and I'm seeing all the tweets. I think we talked about this before, about everything that's under NDA or, you know, what's going on at the conference. And I'm going to feel absolutely like I made the wrong choice, so I've got to be there. I think it's totally a good point. And the funny thing about like every year, how it slightly changes and sort of how the sessions are different. This I felt like was I think I went to fewer sessions this year than I've ever been.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that was, or I should say fewer sessions that I sort of, maybe I got less out of the sessions I went to. Yeah. I don't know how to say this exactly, but there's a lot of sessions I need to go back and rewatch.
Yep.
I missed a lot of morning sessions just because I was lazy. And then there were a lot of conflicts in sessions because this was the first year that it was essentially a single track conference, right? It was just iPhone sessions. So there were some days where there were three or four sessions that I could potentially go to in that time slot. And in the past, you know, we haven't seen that. There's been either half and half Mac, iPhone, or in previous years, you know, IT and web sessions. So that was interesting. And there's a whole bunch of stuff I need to go back and rewatch. They also did something kind of weird this year where they repeated sessions, but not tape replay. They actually redid the sessions. I don't remember them ever doing that before, where the same presenters got up 3 days later and just gave the session again.
Yeah.
Which was great. I thought, I mean, poor Apple guys, but I mean, that was really nice if you missed something to have a live session again where you could get up and have Q&A again. You could talk to people again afterwards.
Right. Yeah. I mean, as usual for me, another problem with WWDC for me is it's really hard to guess from the session descriptions and whether it's going to be A, good, and B, whether, you know, the vague description is going to match with what, you know, you actually expect. So it's a lot of times it's like, you know, there's all these loaded words like mastering, and mastering right. means mastering in WWDC speak means like the second half of the expository of all that's available in the API,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that whereas like there's maybe sometimes they use it accurately, but like there was another session I went to this year that was like, it had kind of a tame name. Like, I don't know. Maybe they used a different word, like maximizing or something, mm-hmm. you know,
understanding,
yeah. But it had, unlike those really, in my opinion, dumb ones where they're just kind of going down the .h files and explaining to you what all the constants mean and what the functions do. Mm-hmm. This is like, was like practical tips for getting the most out of a particular API. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, more like this. Come on, people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just, I looked back at the description. There's no way I could have known.
Yeah. They need to be more specific. They need to put the speaker's names in there and they need to say specifically what they're going to cover. So there was one session called, you know, something, something text, something, something. And I don't know, is that going to be like how to use NS string? Is that going to be Cortex? Is that going to be, you know, UI text view? Is that going to be, who knows? You don't know until you show up what it's going to be like. And the beginning might be completely different than the last half. So the first 5 minutes you're like, oh, this wasn't what I was expecting. Then you leave. And then an hour later you talk to someone and say, oh man, the last 45 minutes, that session was amazing.
Right.
But they also had a bunch of part one and part two sessions, which is kind of a clue that if you've done anything with this before, you can probably just go to the part two.
Right.
So we're going to take a couple questions. We actually have two questions recently that were kind of similar, so we'll throw those together. One's from Nicholas Tulak. Was wondering if you could talk about your testing strategies and approaches for your products. What kind of tests do you run? Do you do test-driven development? Why or why not? What would your ideal test environment look like? And also, Neo, that's all I have. I don't know what his last name is, but he wrote in saying, do you use unit testing in your Objective-C projects? If so, how? What tools? Workflow? He says, I'm starting to see great benefits to doing some unit testing for myself for bigger, i.e. all projects. So I don't do a lot of unit testing, to be honest. I sort of got on like, oh yeah, I'm going to do unit testing, you know, a handful of years ago. I'm like, this is going to be great. And then I spent a bunch of time running tests, and then I added new features to my app and all the tests broke, and then I had to go rewrite the tests. And I after a while I got kind of tired of that sort of, oh, I've just got to like redo all the tests again because I've refactored and completely redesigned how my app works. So I find they're pretty good for models and some sort of lower level things. But, actually in the last two projects I have like literally like no unit tests whatsoever, just because I haven't made time to go do that. But you do more unit testing than me. You're a good Mac programmer. And tell us about your unit test, Daniel.
Well, I don't do so much, but I am always trying to do more, and I'm driven to do more by the complexity of some of my my source, some of the like problem domains that I'm tackling. Mm-hmm. The best argument I have, frankly, for unit testing doubters, I was actually talking to, not to say that they are doubters, but I was talking to some of the Corellia software guys at the beer bash at WWDC, and it sort of came up in my mind as I was explaining to them why and when I do testing. The best thing about unit testing is when having a unit test system in place actually makes fixing a bug faster. Okay, so mm-hmm. I think a lot of people think of unit testing as this sort of extra thing that you do on top of all the code, right? You know, you write your code, you fix your bugs, and then you write tests to make sure that the bugs are fixed. But there's some really cool examples I've had recently where, because I've started using unit tests in some, you know, sort of specific areas, I am literally able to fix the bug without ever launching the app. And then I only mm-hmm. launch the app at the end to confirm that, you know, my tests actually, you know, correlate to the bug being fixed. Mm-hmm. This is particularly interesting in situations where you have kind of like some part of your app that sort of takes a long time to get to, or has a heavy, you know, overhead for loading. I'm thinking in particular of Mars Edit's new rich text editor. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it's not that big of a deal to launch an app, open a new document, make sure it's in rich text mode, do some typing, et cetera, et cetera. But it's the kind of thing that a unit test framework can sort of just have instantiated and ready to go. And so, for instance, if you have a bug report that says, you know, when I type this word and then hit bold and then type this word, it doesn't come out bold. In the absence of a unit testing framework for that, it would be not the biggest problem in the world to go launch the app and, you know, open a document. But, you know, I'm trying to move towards a situation where, because of the complexity of this and just because I don't want to have to open the app again and again every time when I'm working on some of these bugs, I just have like, you know, little test bundles that only load the parts of the code that are in question and can then, you know, exercise that code in very specific ways. So I think it's kind of obvious in retrospect that there is that benefit to testing, but I think I like to remind people of that because I do think a lot of people think of unit testing as all cost, you know, like it's sort of, or as like, you know, maybe the payoff is more reliability and more, you know, avoiding repeating the same bugs as you used to have. But I think people rarely consider the fact that you might actually save time writing the code itself and fixing bugs in the code itself. So I really like it for these kinds of problems where you're sort of chipping away at a huge system. So mm-hmm. something where you have lots of different inputs and you expect very specific outputs, that kind of thing is a really good setup for unit testing. And again, that would fall into the sort of model area that you're talking about. I'm not so excited, not so big on unit testing for the UI or controller layers because, frankly, I think there's more room for bugs in my models. And I suppose it's sort of a situation where as long as I still have significant model layer code to add tests for and to get sort of under test control, it might just be a better use of my time to stick there. And it so happens that it's easier to write tests for models. So that's basically where I put my time. Aside from that, you know, the questions sort of allude to what other testing strategies we might have. And I, you know, a lot of it, I fall back on beta testers to sort of provide the diversity of techniques for using the software.
Sure.
I do try to, you know, for most of my apps, I actually use them myself on a regular basis. So I usually try to just make sure I'm running the latest for a while before I release it.
What do you do? So one of the things I'm running into with my new app, which talks to Twitter, is just the whole idea. I've been thinking of throwing around the idea of testing the services and the responses and making sure that I exercise that just in case something breaks or, you know, the server changes or, you know, I don't know, I adopt some different parsing library and everything breaks. Do you do much with Mars edits? I mean, you talk to a bunch of different blogging engines. Do you do any automated tests so that you can like run a few things and know that you probably didn't break anything between, you know, WordPress and movable type and, or like mock objects for like dealing with network stuff, or what do you do there?
Yeah, I do a significant amount of testing there. I still need more, but I actually do the vast majority of that testing is sort of a mock object like you suggested, mm-hmm. meaning that I'm never actually hitting the network. Yeah. And that's important for, you know, the so-called true unit test because it has no outside dependencies. I can run it, you know, even if I'm mm-hmm. on an airplane, I can be working on
sure.
These tests. So to accomplish that, I actually have a pretty cool setup with a fake HTTP server I run from the test itself.
Oh, okay.
And I'm going to have to blog about this because I think it's yeah. a pretty clever solution. But it allows me to do things like, say, write a test for a typical WordPress response and then write another method right there that actually fabricates that response, which is a pretty handy way to really cover all those bases. But then going back to what you said about, you know, making sure it still works, like if Twitter changes their API or something, I have a different target in my Mars Edit build called integration tests. And yeah. this is the distinction between the true unit tests and tests that I just want to run every once in a while to make sure, you know, my understanding of the world is still good. So these tests actually go out to real servers. You know, I have test accounts on most of the major blog systems, and it actually goes out and says, you know, I want to make sure that auto configuration still works. I want to make sure that a simple, you know, editing a post still works. And these I can run, you know, whenever I have a real network connection. They're a little bit more prone to failure, false failure, because, you know, if let's say WordPress.com is just having a bad day, my test might fail, right? But it does let me know if something has changed intentionally on those services. So I would recommend doing something like that for a service like Twitter, because, you know, then you just know, you could have this test run maybe only once a day, and then, you know, you can get, you know, have it run once a day and send you an email ideally that would say, mm-hmm. hey, Manton, you know, Twitter's hosed.
Yeah.
And
Twitter's down again.
Right. Or you know, yeah. not so much down, but no, like, I tried to request this and it gave me the wrong data.
Right. Especially good for services that do sort of deprecate their old APIs all the time, which I think Twitter's going to be in the habit of doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think I need both of those too in my app. I have some sort of basic stuff that's similar to what you were talking about with mocking the network locally, but it's not even close to complete. It's just sort of like the bare bones that I can use to test a few things without hitting the network.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's good.
Having a good infrastructure changes everything. It's like, I really didn't write a lot of these tests until I gave myself a sort of a clever trick to make it easy to do,
yep.
you know, the request and the response at the same time. So I'll have to blog about that. And, I think we could talk more about testing. Maybe we'll do another, maybe like a testing-oriented show sometime.
Yeah, that sounds good.
But after I write some of this stuff up, it would give a good context for it.
Yeah, cool. So, all right, well, that's a show today. Thanks for listening, guys. And we'll talk to you again next time, Daniel.
Sounds good. See you later, Manton.
All right. Bye.